All right, let me just say a few things about electrophoresis, which is the technique we're doing today. It is a separation technique. There are many different separation techniques in science. Can you name any others? Centrifugation is a separation technique, right? Centrifugation separates things based on their different weights. Heavier things fall to the bottom. Any others? Well, there's distillation, for instance, which is how you make booze. Distillation allows you to separate things based on their different boiling points, so you can evaporate some things out and leave the rest behind. And there is chromatography. We're not doing that in here. We don't do distillation. But anyway, those are other separation techniques. Electrophoresis separates things on three major bases. It separates things based on electrical charge, on size, and on shape. But if you have a collection of particles, none of which is electrically charged, then you need to look elsewhere for a separation technique, because electrophoresis will not separate anything if none of them is charged. At least some of them have to be charged. And that's because the basis of electrophoresis is the attraction that a charged particle has for an opposite charge. Just like when ions attract each other because of opposite charges. And so in the electrophoresis chamber, which is the chamber that the gel is in that you just loaded, the gel is subjected to a voltage or a potential, an electrical potential. So you have to have, when I turn the power on, oh, I forgot to turn the power on. I should do that so that we're not wasting time. But when I put the lid on, which connects the electrodes, if I can put the lid on, and I turn on the voltage, I'm going to put it 120, a little higher. You don't want to have the voltage too high, because it won't get good results. But the higher the voltage, the quicker it'll go. Anyway, what I'm doing here by giving it voltage is creating a tendency for particles that are charged to move to the end of the chamber that is oppositely charged. All right? Now, the gel that you just loaded looks like this, meaning the wells were all at one end. You don't have to make a gel like that. You could make a gel with the wells halfway between the ends. And that would be appropriate if you were using a mixture of particles, some of which were negatively charged and some of which were positively charged. Because if you have a positive charge up here and a negative down here in your chamber, then the negatively charged particles are going to move up toward the positive, and the positively charged ones are going to move down toward the negative. All right? Well, we didn't use that kind of gel because we know what our particles are, what type they are. What are our particles? DNA particles. And therefore, what is their charge? Negative. It doesn't matter where you get DNA from, whatever organism, DNA is always negatively charged. And why is that? Because each nucleotide has a phosphate and each nucleotide has a negative charge to it. Yes. So we know, since we're dealing with only DNA particles, that they are definitely going to move toward the positive, oppositely charged end, which, by the way, means you better make sure when you put this gel in the chamber that you have the well at the negatively charged end Because otherwise, if you had it reversed, the DNA would just spill right off the edge of the gel. Instead, the DNA is going to move through the gel toward the oppositely charged positive end. Did you have a question? Okay. And so these particles are moving through this semi-solid gel medium. It's a little bit like you walking through a pool. It's easy to walk through the air, but it's much harder to walk through a pool that's with water up to your chest. And notice, by the way, if you, or even higher, let's say up to your neck. If you're walking through a pool with water up to your neck, you can make it even harder if you spread your body out, right? So that's why shape also matters. Charge matters. Charge determines the direction in which something is going to move. Shape determines how fast it's going to move, partially. And also size does. The bigger something is, the harder time it's going to have moving through that gel. Okay, so all three of those things matter. Shape, charge, and size. But DNA doesn't really have different shapes. So really what we're dealing with in this experiment is shape. It's size. Now, one thing that seems a little bit counterintuitive for a lot of people at first is, and I've already told you this, is that the smaller the particle is, the easier it is to move, which means in a given amount of time, it will be able to move farther through the gel than something that's small, that's something that's larger. And if you have in your well a collection of different sized particles, different pieces of DNA that are different sizes, the electrophoresis trial is more or less like a race. All of them start at the start line, which is where the well is, but they'll move at different speeds based on their size, and therefore they'll separate out from each other. That's the separation aspect of electrophoresis. Each well corresponds to a lane, just like the lanes of a pool if you have a swimming race, right? And what you eventually see, if you get good results and you see anything, are called bands in the lane. They'll look like solid bars. Now, a band, if you see it, is not a single particle. A single piece of DNA would be too small to see at all, even if it is there. It takes millions of copies of the same size particle at the same place in the gel for it to be visible with the human eye. That's why last week we subjected the samples to PCR, so you do have millions of copies. All right? So when you have a bunch of copies, since they're all identical, they'll move at exactly the same speed, and that will form a band. Now, if you have millions of copies of one size and millions of copies of another size, they'll move and separate as two bands. And you'll have as many bands as there are different sizes. Okay? Now, think about what you did last week. You sampled DNA from owls. You chose owl DNA. And you subjected that to PCR to make millions of copies. But the PCR process did not actually make copies of the entire length of DNA in your original sample. Remember what primers do in the cell in real replication? The primers are put down first and then it grows from there. Well, in the PCR process, the scientist chooses specific pre-made primers that are, it's a sequence that is complementary to a specific sequence in the sample, if it's there, that they're looking for. And so when you make your mixtures, remember I gave you something that I squirted in each of your samples that had primers in it plus a bunch of nucleotides. Well, if your sample has the sequence that the primer is complementary to, the primer will find it and stick to it, and it won't if it's not there. And then only if it's there, it will grow from there. So in other words, the PCR process amplifies just a specific sequence of DNA that it's looking for if it's there, not the entire thing. Okay, well, you had a primer for a piece of DNA that occurs in one of the sex chromosomes in birds, and another primer for a corresponding segment in the other kind of sex chromosome. We mammals use X and Y that you probably are familiar with. Birds have basically the same system, except it's not an X chromosome and a Y chromosome, it's a Z and a W. And the other difference is that in humans, the male is the one with one of each, XY. The female has two X's. But in birds, the female has one of each, a Z and a W, and the male has two Z's. Okay, well, we're taking advantage of the separation aspect of electrophoresis to sex the owls that gave you the samples you chose. And that's because if it's a male, there are two Z's, and therefore all of the fragments that are amplified will be identical. And therefore, it should form just one band. Right? But if you have a female, you're going to have millions of copies of one size and millions of copies of the other size from the other chromosome, and therefore, they should separate out as two bands. Simple as that. Hopefully it's simple. Does that make sense? So, let's say that this is a female. You get two bands. And by the way, where those are depends on how long you run the trial, which is why loading dye is colored, by the way. Because while this is running, you can't see the DNA. You can't see any bands until you subject it to ultraviolet light, which is why we have to put it in the transilluminator over there once it's done. But the orange dye is visible, and you can look at the trials as they run. You can see the orange is moving away from the wells. And the orange dye is designed to be particles that are smaller than any of the particles you're looking for. And that's because, since they're smaller, they'll move faster than any of your DNA does, and therefore they'll be in the lead in the race. And what you want to do is run it long enough so that they separate out well, so you can tell them apart, the bands, once you see them. But you don't want to run it forever because they'll just spill off the other end if you keep letting that happen. So the dye lets you run it as long as you can until you get to the edge to maximize the separation and still prevent them from spilling off. So anyway, we're not going to go quite to the edge, but we're going to let it run a while. Anyway, back to the question of if this is a female, which it should be because she has two different chromosomes and therefore two bands, what should the male look like? One band, as I said, but where is that band? Yes, it should line up with one of the females, but which one? Why is that? Right. The Z chromosome fragment is a little bit longer than the W chromosome fragment. So the one that's longer is slower, right? So this is her Z and this is her W. A male would have two Z's, so it should match up with this top one, whichever one doesn't go as far. Any questions on any of that? Okay, well, it'll take it a while to do the separation, so while you're waiting on that, I want you to just discuss with your partner and these questions that start on page 153, which is about gene expression. This is a good review. It's good to talk it out because that helps you remember it and explain it to each other. But it's stuff that you really have already learned. So do that while we wait, and then we'll look at them once the results are available.